Welcome back to Copper Country Today. I'm your host, Rick Allen. And during this segment, we're going to be talking with some folks from the Civil Air Patrol and here to help me do that. Welcoming back, Kevin Caddo. Welcome back again, of course, to the program. We've talked to you before. It's always good to talk to you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
And joining with us is the new commander for the local squadron of the Civil Air Patrol, Jeff Burrell. Jeff, welcome.
Well, thank you.
Of course, this is your first time here in Copper Country Today, so we're going to start with you just to get a little idea of who you are as the new commander. But before I get into that, I'm going to give Kevin a chance here to tell us what the Civil Air Patrol is so our listeners know.
Okay, what we're most known for, if we're known for at all, because some people don't seem to know about us, we do search and rescue, disaster relief flights, and aerospace education.
Yeah, well, what kind of planes do you use?
We use Cessna 172s or 182s, and those are high-wing aircraft, so it makes a perfect platform for being able to look outside and look for, say, missing people, or if we're taking pictures of a disaster site, that sort of thing.
So for people that maybe aren't, you know, so up on the different kinds of planes, it's usually like, you know, the traditional one-engine plane, the little small prop
correct.
Planes that people go up in.
Single-engine land, that's
okay.
Correct.
Gotcha, okay. Now let me go back to Jeff. Now, Jeff, how long have you been involved with this?
Well, it's probably been about 10 years. I've been in Civil Air Patrol.
What kind of experience flying did you have before that?
I've flown many things. I was in the Naval Flying Club. I'm a commercial pilot, a flight instructor, an instrument instructor, a glider pilot, a glider instructor. So I have quite a bit of experience. I've been flying for about 40 years.
Started off in the military?
No, I wasn't in Navy Flying Club. I used to teach at the Naval Postgraduate School. But I was always a civilian pilot. Started out flying gliders when I got out of college.
So what drew you to this?
Fundamentally it's the idea of service. You know, if I had a friend that wound up going down in an airplane, it would be nice to be able to do something, to be able to help, to be able to go out and try to find them. And so it's that idea, as I say, probably mostly associated with the emergency services stuff, which is the search and rescue and the disaster relief flying.
Well, prior coming to our neck of the woods, where were you?
Well, before I came here, I was in Monterey, California. Before that, I was in Southern California, where I went to school, and I actually grew up in Lower Michigan.
Oh, really?
So
okay.
I'm a troll, but I've been here for 25 years.
I'm a troll, too. I don't think you could ever shake that off, no matter what you got going. So you had an opportunity to come up here to the Upper Peninsula. Was it specifically to be part of the Civil Air Patrol or for another reason?
Oh, no. I teach at Tech, so I took the job up at Tech, and then I wound up joining the Civil Air Patrol when they started a squadron here.
Okay. And you're the new commander of it. Who was the previous commander, Jeff or Kevin?
That was Tom Kursky. And before that, it was Joe Massini.
Okay. So you found yourself in need of somebody, and then lo and behold, you had somebody here to be able to do that. So that was quite fortunate. You know. What kind of things that, you know, if you're, when you're not actively out looking for someone in any type of search mission, what do you do to get ready or to be prepared for when that time comes?
Well, we do a lot of practicing. For instance, last weekend we were supposed to be doing a search and rescue exercise with Barriga Search and Rescue. We've got one planned with Ontonagon. Unfortunately, with the weather we had last weekend, we had to postpone that one. Flying can be a bit problematic in the winter for a plane that's not ice protected. So we do a lot of training. There's a combination of a little bit of book work and, flying exercises, making sure we all know how to use the equipment, making sure that we're as efficient and as professional as we can be.
Is everybody that's in the Civil Air Patrol, is it all volunteer?
Yes, we are.
So even yourself as commander? So.
Yeah.
Oh. There's about 58,000 members throughout the United States, and we're all volunteers. It's a part of the Air Force.
Well, explain that, I guess, that relationship, because the word civil is in the, you know, the title Civil Air Patrol, so you think it's, you know, it's all civilian, but then you say it's part of the Air Force.
It is. The Air Force, they fund the aircraft and the all of that sort of thing, and then we work for them for free.
Well, we're technically Air Force Auxiliary, So we're an auxiliary of the Air Force. We're part of what they call the Air Force Total Force. They're the umbrella under which we work. You know, they, as I say, they fund the missions. They are basically in charge, you know, of Civil Air Patrol.
Is the basic base of operations the Houghton County Memorial Airport?
For our squadron, yes.
Are there any other airports or airstrips or anywhere? What if you couldn't land there?
There's airports.
There's airports around. I know coming back from a mission, I've landed at Sawyer because I couldn't get in here. I think I've also landed at Ontonagon once because I couldn't get in here. Sometimes we get a little bit of snow at the airport, as you might notice. So.
Yeah, I was supposed to fly out not too long ago, and I arrived to take my plane. It was about 5:30 in the morning. They just had a sign on the door that the flight was canceled for the day. I went in and asked why, and they said, well, the pilot coming in the night before said, nah, and went back to Chicago where he came from, so he wouldn't land here either. But with a small small engine plane like that, have you ever landed anywhere really weird?
Let's see, really weird. Well, around here, of course, really weird might be the Barriga, the grass strip at Barriga. I have not landed the Civil Air Patrol plane there, but I have landed my personal single-engine plane at Chicago O'Hare before. And that was quite an adventure because they don't really... You know, they don't really cater to small planes. When I left, they said my bill was the smallest bill they'd ever seen. And it was a lot.
All right. Well, let's get back to kind of what you guys do here when the Civil Air Patrol is called into action. What agencies do you work with?
Typically the state police, the 911 center, would contact the what we call the NOC, the National Operations Center, and then they would activate us they would get the information on the mission, they would activate us and send us out. We're willing to work with we're working on developing what we call memorandums of understanding with a lot of the local sheriff's departments, Ontonagon Sheriff Department, Houghton, Keweenaw, Barriga, all of those places, so that they can call us, they can get a hold of us quicker and easier and know how to do that.
Well, with such an underserved area, is there a duplication of this service, or if they don't go to you, do they have to go outside of the area?
It turns out we're the only Civil Air Patrol. There's three Civil Air Patrol squadrons in the Upper Peninsula. We've got one in Iron Mountain and one in Escanaba, but we're the only one with a plane. So we basically serve most of the whole Upper Peninsula. I have been called out for missions in Whitefish Bay and we go to Sault Ste. Marie occasionally. So we cover quite a wide range of area.
I would assume probably the most common reason why you guys are called into service would be a missing person.
That happens quite frequently, especially during hunting season. When hunting season's going on, there's a lot of activity out in the woods, so the odds of somebody turning up missing is a lot higher.
I gotta imagine to be near impossible to see an individual down on the ground when you're flying around. So what are you looking for?
Well, it does make it a lot more difficult. What we usually like to do when we're looking for someone, we'll drop down to 1,000 feet above ground level, and we slow the aircraft down to about 90 knots, which is about 100 miles an hour. And then we have the mission pilot who's flying the plane. We have a mission observer who's sitting in the right seat on side of the pilot, and he's looking out his window. And we have the mission scanner who's looking out, and he's sitting behind the pilot, and he's looking out his window. And we fly grids, and we'll set up our GPS so we can fly tracks. And it's almost like you're flying a video game, and you watch the airplane on your screen, and you keep it on the lines, and then you make your tracks back and forth, and you covered the area very well. So that's generally what we do.
For the people, it is, you're right, it's very difficult. If you're under the canopy in the summer, we got not much of a chance of finding you unless you can help us. We did find a few hikers a few years back, and what they did was they built a fire, threw a bunch of leaves on it, made it smoke, and we were able to see the smoke, and then we knew exactly where to look, and we were able to see them down in the canopy. Actually, it's surprisingly in the winter, we can see pretty well. You know, if so, you know, a snowmobile or in a black snowsuit, we would probably actually be able to see if they were laying in the snow from the altitudes that we fly at. Still, it's a difficult task unless the person is cooperating, unless you have somebody that has a signal mirror. By the way, you can even use things like your cell phone, you know, the shiny side of your cell phone to reflect the sunlight up in an airplane. That makes it way easier to see. At night, it's really easy to see fires and stuff. So we can, again, we have things that we look for. We also will look for, if we're looking for a downed airplane, for instance, we might look for the broken branches or something as opposed to the actual airplane, because the airplane went under the canopy, but you might see the signs of the damage where it went under. So, you know, we're trained for certain things to look for, but again, from the standpoint of your listeners, if somebody does get lost and they hear an airplane, if they can build a fire, if they can shine a mirror at it or do something like that, all those things will help us locate them and help them.
I guess sticking with this, you know, tips for those that are lost, and going back to Kevin's point where you're doing that grid, if you're out there lost, of course, your instinct is you want to keep moving. You want to try to find your way back. But could you, you know, end up going back into an area that has already been searched and then take yourself out of the search area? Is it possible? Is it more advantageous if you know you're lost, rather than continue wandering, to do something like just make yourself as visible as possible and stay put?
That would help a lot. And if like Jeff said, if you could light a fire, if you did something that would make yourself stand out, it makes a big difference. And if you can get into a clearing, that's always beneficial.
Yeah. It also turns out that we're aware that the probability of detection when you fly over something once is not 100%. We may not see you, so often we will return and search the same area. It does depend on the size of the area that we're searching. It's hard to do, you know, if somebody's lost up in the Keweenaw, we can fly over that same area several times with the resources that we have. If you're lost on a flight between here and Green Bay and we're flying that whole distance, you know, we're going to make, you know, a limited number of passes over that, you know, in some period of time, because it just takes a long time to search. So partially, you know, if, for instance, one of the things that we might do a pattern called an expanding square, where you just basically fly around a point. If we can find somebody's car where they parked it and then they went in hunting or something, well, we don't know which way they went, but we can start there and search around that. And so if in that case we'd have a very limited search area. We say, well, you know, they didn't go more than a few miles away from this car probably, and so we can search that sometimes multiple times.
Is there a window of, I guess, time where your efforts would be effective, and then at one point you know that at this point there's not a whole lot you can do?
Let's see. I guess the answer is yes. There was somebody recently who wound up dying in a boating accident, and, you know, we looked for 3 days or something, but our charter is to find people that are alive, and so once it was kind of deemed that that was a real low probability, they called off the search.
Okay. So there's a sense of urgency, for more than just the fact that it's emergency, or just because it's an emergency, but because after so much time, there's not a whole lot you're going to be able to really do.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay. What about out on water? You know, we know the Coast Guard here operates too, but, you know, and I'm sure they would go searching if somebody's lost out on the lake, which I would think is probably the only real place someone would get lost around here. But do they call out the Civil Air Patrol for such a search too?
Well, they could. It turns out that we're not equipped to search over open water.
Oh, okay.
You know, it turns out that you can wear a life jacket over Lake Superior. They do say that's just to help them find the body, because that water's cold. Anyway, with that said, is we they can call out the Coast Guard. What it was happening is for instance, if you have a lost boater or something, they could call out the Coast Guard and us. Civil Air Patrol, we do 90-some percent. I don't remember the percentage offhand, but 90-some percent of the search and rescue flying in the country over land. The Coast Guard then does most of the search and rescue flying over water. But again, for a lost boat, what can you have? You can have the boat wash up on shore or something, so we could search the shoreline and out, you know, a couple miles where we can glide to shore. But
they have rules that we're not supposed to be beyond gliding distance back to shore in the event we had an engine out. So, you know, their priority is make sure we stay safe in the event something like that would happen. It's pretty rare, but they want to make sure we're okay. So, you know, we have to take that into consideration, what our altitude is. Can we make it to shore from here? If we can't, we either have to go higher or we would have to just go back to shore.
Well, let's talk about the people who make up the Civil Air Patrol. I assume, of course, they would have a background with flying, but is there any particular training that they get if they, you know, want to join or after they join so that they become better at doing this type of search and rescue?
Well, you don't even need to be a pilot to be in the Civil Air Patrol. Most people probably aren't. I was looking at some stats, and they had, in Michigan, there was about 600 members, and we had 271 air crew members who could be either the mission scanners or the observers, the people who look out for the missing aircraft, the missing people, or whatever, the, you know, if they want aerial photography done. And then you had 270 ground team members, and those are people who would be out searching for those people after maybe we find them, and we say, okay, this is the location, and then they go and extract the people from the from wherever they're located. And then we had 33 mission pilots. So that's not very many that are considered mission pilots. There's a lot of people that are pilots, but a mission pilot, I guess you could explain the details in being a mission pilot.
For Air Force, you know, assigned missions like search and rescue missions, you have to have, you know, for everything in Civil Air Patrol, you have to get qualified. So what you do is you start out, you learn the basics of what you're looking for, and you can be a scanner. And so, you know, non-pilots can ride in the back seat, the right seat. They can be radio operators. They can be ground support people that would operate the mission base. For instance, we go along with all the FEMA rules. You know, there's an incident command system where they kind of standardize this over the whole government so that people from different agencies can work together. So we can be incident, you know, Civil Air Patrol has, the Michigan wing has 13 incident commanders that can deal with certain type, you know, with incidents, and then they have all of these other things. So we have to maintain radio communication. We have to do ground searches, et cetera. So there's lots of different jobs in the Civil Air Patrol other than flying. But, you know,
and even if we've had people in our squadron who are fighter pilots and flew 747s and helicopters and everything, they still have to be trained as well to do it the way the Civil Air Patrol wants. We've flown with other crews from, you know, all over the state. Everybody's trained the exact same way. So it doesn't matter who you put as your crew. It really flows smoothly because everybody's taught the same way.
I really never pictured that you didn't have to be a pilot to be part of the Civil Air Patrol. So I'm glad you kind of cleared that up, because there may be other people who be willing to volunteer and help, but, you know, they've never been behind the wheel of an airplane.
And you don't need to. And if you want, you don't even have to set foot in an airplane, and there's tasks you could do. Some people, they like working the radios at the mission base, or I don't know, there's a list of different jobs you could do.
The Civil Air Patrol has three fundamental goals that are set by the Congress and the Air Force. One is cadet programs, emergency services, and aerospace education. So we also do a lot of aerospace education things. We teach a summer youth program at Tech on aviation and aerospace. And, you know, so there's different things. We can provide services to, you know, if a local school wants to do something with an aviation program, we would be happy to participate in that. So there's different things. It turns out that up here we don't have a cadet program. We're a senior squadron. So we do two of those things, the emergency services and the aerospace education.
But and cadets are 12 to 20 years old.
So. And they do a lot of leadership training and stuff like that for these kids. And they get airplane rides.
They get, actually get more than rides. They get to be at the controls under our supervision, and they really enjoy that. I've given lots of rides. And we also give flight instruction to Michigan Tech Air Force ROTC students. And they love it, and they are good, too.
Yeah, of course, is it the Civil Air Patrol then that does the training at the Summer Youth Program at Michigan Tech, or is that a different group?
A lot of the members are, but the Civil Air Patrol officially doesn't let anybody fly in their aircraft because you have to be a member, and there's you have to be in uniform, and the kind of the list goes on to make sure you're covered under their insurance and everything. So we're not able to take them up in our plane.
This it turns out that we do give cadet orientation rides in the Civil Air Patrol plane. We give Air Force ROTC orientation rides. You know, the Air Force ROTC people gets, you know, some number of rides. I guess they get four rides in the front, four rides in the back seat. And we'll do that for both. For the Summer Youth Program, it is the Civil Air Patrol that composes all of the instructors. So we teach the program. And then we arrange to, we actually, all the students in that program wind up with airplane rides, but we have to do it in, you know, we actually work with the, what is it?
The EAA,
the Experimental Aircraft Association, has a program where they provide insurance for giving kids rides to just promote aviation. So we do that, and we typically fly, we have to fly our own planes for that. And several of us have planes, and we get a few non-CAP members to also fly those rides for us.
I get the impression that the Civil Air Patrol has a lot in common with, you know, like some of our volunteer fire departments. You mentioned, Jeff, that you're an instructor or a teacher over at Michigan Tech. What do you teach?
I'm in electrical engineering, electrical and computer engineering.
So you're not even over there doing, you know, aeronautical stuff.
I have designed autopilots for things before. So. But they were usually things that blew up. Anyway, sorry.
So
on purpose.
Okay. Yeah.
But it's funny. I talk to some people that don't fly, and they're like, "Well, isn't it really scary and all this stuff?" And I tell them a lot of times, like when you're learning and you're with an instructor, I said it's as safe as being in your mother's arms. It's like you're not afraid of nothing. You see how well they can fly and handle the plane. They explain how to do things. You know, they demonstrate, then you try it, and it's kind of like if anything started to go a little bit out of hand, they would just say, "I have the controls," and they take over, and, you know.
Yeah. I was going to get into is that what is the level of commitment? Because as, like, Jeff teaches that over at Michigan Tech, I know, Kevin, you have, you know, your own profession, too. You're not always doing Civil Air Patrol. So what, you know, how much time, if somebody's looking about volunteering, do they have to look at committing to being part of this?
I think that's the best part. You can be as committed as you want or not, depending on your schedule and, you know, what's going on in your life. We have some members that we barely ever see, and then there's some that, you know, we never miss a meeting or, you know, anytime there's any event going on, we're kind of involved.
Yeah, we have a, typically it's a weekly meeting for, you know, an hour, hour and a half. And then what we do is we will do training. There's a lot of, Civil Air Patrol has set up a lot of online training, so you can take online courses to learn to be a scanner or something to operate or to be an aerial photographer. So there's a lot of online stuff that you can do, which is kind of on your, you know, when you get a chance. We're trying to run a search and rescue exercise every 2-3 weeks this time of year. You know, sometimes we get weathered out because that's the way things go, but so we wind up with that, but that's not necessarily everybody. That's a subset of people that are interested, that are currently trying to train to be a observer, to get a new thing. You also have to do recurrency training. Once you've achieved a qualification like being an aerial photographer, every, you know, that expires in, I think it's 4 years, and so in that 4 years you've got to redo a lot of that training to make sure that you're still up on
proficient.
It. And the aerial photographer stuff is usually something that does require recurrent training because we keep getting different cameras and we get different, you know, different software systems for uploading things. So that's a bit of a, you know, you got to keep up on that stuff.
Yeah. I've been up in planes and a helicopter in this local area with a camera, even a television camera before. And yeah, it's nothing like being on the ground. And so opportunities there for videographers and photographers as well if they want to get involved. And speaking of that, if somebody does want to get involved, what's the best way for them to do that?
Well, there's a website for the wing, but if they would contact me, that would be a good place to start. I don't know if we can – I'll give you a card. We can post something on your website with phone number and email, and if somebody is interested, they can contact me and see what's going on. There is a lot of – you know, our squadron really doesn't have a website, but the Michigan wing, the Civil Air Patrol is broken up into wings, which are basically states. And so the Michigan wing has a very extensive website, and then the National has a website, so you can see what we do and – What is involved.
All right. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for coming on the program and talking about that. And, you know, good luck, and thank you for the work that you do.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you for having us, and you're welcome.
Copper Country Today. We'll be right back.